Well, as you might have guessed from the write-up, my presentation is going to be focused a little differently than the earlier ones that we had talked about. I am going to be talking about HIV/AIDS. It's based on research that we have been conducting on the unit. Again, no financial disclosures to disclose. For this presentation, I'd like to acknowledge funding support from the National Institute of Nursing Research. I'd like to give you a little bit of a context of both HIV disease and how that really relates to the broader model of care, of palliative care. While we're all very much aware that in our lifetimes, as AIDS first emerged, then our understanding of it as a disease brought us into the concept of HIV as the precursor of AIDS, and where initially we started out with it being a very vulnerable, severe disease in which people once diagnosed only lived a matter of weeks or months, we're now dealing with an illness that is being viewed consistently as a chronic disease that in many cases is not regarded as being a significant foreshortening of one's life. But even with these advances, it's very important to recognize that HIV/AIDS is still a fatal disease, and that there are a number of populations for whom it's a matter of approaching the end of life as opposed to managing the illness and living an active life. Particularly individuals who lack access to health care, whose lifestyle and behavior adversely impact their overall health status in general, those are individuals who, when they are HIV infected, are less responsive to the various treatments and are likely to be developing other comorbid conditions that, between the combination of factors, either reduces the likelihood of HIV treatment being effective in controlling their symptoms or helps precipitate a more rapid decline. So palliative care is still very much the most appropriate model of care when all appropriate treatment regimes are no longer effective in being able to manage the illness. With that in mind then, this is the accepted model, an understanding of the trajectory of dying with advanced AIDS and HIV in the U.S. It's very different in developing countries, even though now that with various treatment advances being moved over into the less developed world, we're starting to see models that are looking closer to this. What it is basically showing over here is that it is a downward trajectory towards death, punctuated by periods of crises that are bringing the individual closer to death. Current advances in treatment and management pull the person back up to a level of stability, but even with that, it's still a continued downward trajectory. Again, depending upon their lifestyle, prior health status, socioeconomic background that may have impacted involvement in care sooner, it still is a downward trajectory. There are a number of challenges related to HIV that impact palliative care in the U.S. It's still a disease that is stigmatized, especially in many of the more disenfranchised populations that are experiencing it. There's a fear of contagion. It's episodic, unpredictable disease trajectory. And so it's really difficult when it is appropriate in many instances to initiate palliative care. Palliative care in general is not curative care, that's the definition of it, but palliation of symptoms is really a matter of comfort care, and many times palliating one symptom is best attended to by treating another condition. So it really is a mix of palliative care and active care simultaneously. The nature of opportunistic infections means that there are times in which disease complications really intensify one's health status condition and complicate the type of care that needs to be done. I've already talked about the idea of active versus palliative. Okay, so in terms of, this is a study focused on the community population, so it's important to really understand the individual who is ill in the setting in which they are living with their condition. There's a high prevalence in impoverished communities. AIDS services in general are fragmented in these communities. And when you bring in palliative care, which again is a specialist type of approach, that is something that tends to be even more scarce and less accessible in impoverished settings. So what that leads to then is a limitation of services and links to the types of conditions and supports that individuals living with an advanced disease might need to enhance their quality of life and their comfort care. The other thing to recognize that HIV is not dealt with in a standard palliative care model. Individuals who have advanced AIDS frequently have a number of behavioral and social problems that one is dealing with. And this impacts what services are needed, where care is delivered, and who's involved in the care provision. With palliative care, you can see that the for HIV, the delivery site is really widespread. One automatically thinks of the first few ones, but the idea of a correctional facility as being a major source of palliative care for people with HIV is very common. The types of services are beyond just what you might think of a health services, and it brings in the broader context and the complexities of needs that an individual who has developed HIV is coping with in their day-to-day lives. So that's just by way of illustration of palliative care is beyond immediately attending to the individual's physical symptom. Common other needs that are linked in a palliative care program that is addressing this population are needs related to housing, food, substance abuse treatment, legal advocacy, as well as child services. As adults die and have dependent children, the need of who is going to be taking control of this child, where they would be placed, are all very important. If the child himself is HIV infected, it becomes even more complex, the care. The populations who are now receiving palliative care are very hard to reach and extremely vulnerable because of the complexity of needs that they have. So they're the homeless, the substance abusers, the incarcerated, multiply diagnosed mentally ill, and the uninsured. Palliative care teams are really an example of what multidisciplinary healthcare is going to be in today's society as individuals are growing older and more complex needs need to be managed. So in a sense, what we are learning with this particular disease will help us better prepare for the needs that an aging population is going to be presenting us. So they include specialists that you don't routinely think of, in this for HIV, which is the substance abuse counselor outreach worker. And so you have people who are knowledgeable about these social conditions and behaviors, and individuals who are then knowledgeable about the health behaviors. So if you see here, what we have is a range of individuals to address all these different types of complexities. However, the reason that I'm talking about the study today is this study was conducted to kind of understand what were the care preferences and needs as people approach the end of life, and to what extent can we better develop palliative care models that address the needs of this population. So we followed adults with advanced HIV/AIDS living in the community and receiving outpatient care. We collected in-depth interviews and survey interviews with the patients and their informal care provider, and conducted multiple waves of interviews as they up until the point at which they died. This just gives you a little bit of an idea of the demographics of who I'm talking about. It is both men and women. It's a range of ages. It's not just younger adults. It's even into their 60s. This happened to have been one of the poorer sections of the Bronx, so It's a very diverse population. And interestingly, only a small proportion of these individuals are living alone. They are embedded with other individuals sharing housing in relationships. You see that they are primarily on disability. When we then looked at what they were experiencing in their lives in terms of symptoms, what emerged out of this was the fact that there were a number of what could be characterized as oral health symptoms starting to appear as part of a broader-based understanding of the symptoms someone dying with AIDS is experiencing. So dry mouth is one of the leading ones. When we just looked at the prevalence of oral health symptoms independent of what the top symptoms were, which is the prior slide, as dry mouth, changes in the way food tastes, difficulty swallowing, mouth sores. When we then looked at the most common medical services patients reported needing, ambulatory outpatient care, of course, was the highest. The second highest, though, was oral health care, followed by the other needs, which is, as I described with the population broader needs are, you could see how it was kind of surprising that oral health care ended up being the second leading need reported. The reason why I'm talking about this today is as we try to better understand palliative care and who should really be involved in managing enhancing comfort care and quality of life as people are dealing with these complex issues, is that attention to palliative end-of-life issues, no one has really talked about oral health as a component that needs to be systematically addressed as one is dealing with palliation. No one has really consulted with oral health providers over what they might be able to contribute as a member of the palliative care team. And what this data is starting to show is that this is in fact a need. There are symptoms that can benefit from palliation, and there's expertise that in a model in which it's very common to just bring in the most unusual, you know, bringing a substance abuse provider on board, or someone who is a specialist in incarceration issues, and working with other members of the palliative care team, that this is an opportunity to really expand the role of oral health into addressing what is essentially a important need, and one that I think needs to be attended to. And that's it.
We have time for a question. Colleen? Do you want to come up to the mic?
Oh, I'm loud.
Okay.
His objection to the statement that oral health care workers are not involved in the palliative and routine care of individuals living with HIV, if you look at the HRSA HIV/AIDS Bureau, across all parts, there's oral health and many oral health care programs that have been established for over 21 years. Oral health itself has been reported as the third highest unmet need across the board among all persons living with HIV, but what affects where it is in the spectrum is first the ability to access housing, get the substance abuse, all the other services you list, and once those are attained, then an individual is more likely to seek oral health care. So I don't look at our role as palliative. I look at it as the way Kirsten defines it, as a core medical service for which 75% of their HIV/AIDS funding must be used for core medical services, including oral health.
Well, I'm certainly not disputing the points that you're making. What I am talking about, though, is that in working with the palliative care teams that are on the ground running in different types of community settings, and what is regarded as who are the key members who are likely to be involved in providing care, oral health specialists, however you might want to define those individuals, might be occasionally consulted, but are not the first point of attention that someone might be wanting to kind of come and bring in. And what I'm trying to point out is, I think, more attention of how they could be involved earlier on at the end of life is really what I'm trying to go forward. So it's a matter of just, when you think of the palliative care model, oral health is not the first thing that is brought in, and I really feel that it should be from the palliative care community.
That I totally agree with. It should be early on.
Yes.
Montefiore having the 10 health community health centers.
Right.
It's amazing to me, because of Selwyn being one of your authors, that they haven't brought in the hospital system or the 10 health centers.
No, I definitely agree with you on that. And you know, when we were looking at this data, it was something that was brought to his attention that it when you look at it from that lens as opposed to a different lens, it doesn't come out. But when you start seeing about who can really attend and are they really it's one thing to have somebody as a consult on a need-by-need basis. It's another to think of it, you're part of the team, and your insights and your care plan is going to affect what's going on. And that hasn't been done yet. And I think this is what we need to move towards.
Thank you. We have time for one more question. If there's anyone here with a question or comment, or for one of our other previous speakers. I'd like to thank all of our speakers so far for being so timely with their presentations.
I have a quick question.
Okay.
You showed the trajectory of decline. How does that trajectory compare to just a general person? I would argue that everyone has a trajectory of decline.
That particular part is true. However, it's not just the matter of the decline. I mean, we're all growing older and declining from the point at which we're born. What is there are all these really intense, sharp, like dropping off the cliff type drops where you're almost like comatose, and then an immediate shooting back up. When you keep having multiple patterns like that over time, it really impacts, you know, is this it? Do we get to pull back up? Or, okay, well, this is definitely something. Well, I've done this before, so that means it's going to be recovery, recovery, and recovery. Or it's going to be, this is the end one. And it's this kind of uncertainty and precipitous decline and miraculous recovery that characterizes HIV/AIDS, which is different from other, you know, like you're not continually having a heart attack and being pulled back up. That type of a expression.
Thank you.